Today is Monday, May the 11th, 2020, the day after Mother's Day, and I hope any of the ladies on the line had a great Mother's Day yesterday, and looking forward to the next one for the next year. Today is our special telephonic council meeting. I have an announcement to make as soon as we actually are getting to the meeting. But first of all, Madam Clerk, are you on the line?
Yes, Mayor.
Okay, would you call the roll, please?
The Honorable Mayor Elizabeth Carhurst.
Present.
The Honorable Mayor Pro Tem Ulysses J. Smallwood.
Present.
The Honorable Linda J. Davis.
Present.
The Honorable Alex Heath.
Present.
The Honorable Hattie Portis Jones.
Present.
The Honorable Pat Palin.
Present.
The Honorable James Whitmore.
Present.
Madam Mayor, the attendance of council constitutes a quorum. Please allow the meeting to continue.
Thank you so much, Madam Clerk. Just for the record, is Mr. Randy Turner on the line?
I am. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Well, welcome. I've called the meeting to order. We've done the roll call. Reverend Heath, or is it Councilman Heath today? Can you give us the invocation?
Yes, ma'am, I can.
Okay. Go ahead.
All right. Father God, in the name of Jesus, we come to you. We ask your blessings upon our city, upon our council, upon our management, upon each and every employee, dear God, that you would bless us with perfect health and that we'll do the things that are necessary to fulfill our duties as council people. Father, we just thank you and ask your blessings upon each and every day. And that, Father, you will give us the wisdom to always do the right thing in whatever we do. In your name we pray. Amen.
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 We are still attempting to, before we get to our presentation with Mr. Doug Moses this evening from Alden and Jenkins, we are still attempting to use Zoom or to use GoToMeeting. We tried to do a test run on Friday of last week. It didn't go so well, so we decided to scrap it and start over again. So between now and our next meeting in June, we hope to have it up and running so at least we can do a Zoom meeting or a GoToMeeting meeting with the council. We need this to happen because we are going to be having planning and zoning meetings, and we're just going to have a better way of doing these meetings other than telephonic. So we're going to be working on that for probably the next 30 days and trying to figure out how we're going to go about getting it done. I think one of the issues is we've got to have either cameras or we've got to have laptops that have the cameras already installed. And we're going to be ordering some additional laptops on tomorrow for planning and zoning that will be used between planning and zoning and the Board of Appeals. And so any council member who does not have a laptop that has a camera in it, then what we're going to do is kind of recycle those laptops around the city until we get into our new budget year where we can actually buy laptops and update them. So with that being said, hopefully in the next 30 days we shall have this up and running. We're going to be doing trial runs quite often there in City Hall to make sure that we have worked out all the glitches before we go live. The next item on the agenda is going to be a presentation of our FY 2019 audit, and it's being presented tonight by Mr. Doug Moses, who's a partner with Malden and Jenkins. And let me just say before we began the presentation that they have done an excellent job with our books here in the city of Fairburn. And I'm also glad about our finance department who have worked really, really hard to make sure that everything was done in order. So with that being said, our finance director, Angela Jackson, are you on the line?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Is Mr. Moses on the Doug Moses on the line to begin the presentation?
Yes, ma'am. I'm here.
Okay. Well, welcome aboard, and thank you so much for being on the telephonic council meeting with us tonight. With that being said, you have the telephone.
All right. Thank you. Thank you all for having me to present the city's 2019 art results. You know, used to being, you know, in present, you know, as far as presenting to you all, but we'll deal with this in this pandemic. Hopefully you all have your CAFR and the auditor's discussion and analysis and had a chance to kind of look over it. But as far as today's presentation, I'm just going to kind of touch on some of the highlights from the auditor's discussion and analysis document. So does everyone have that document in front of you?
Yes, I do.
Yes, we do.
Okay. Okay, great. All right, so if you could go to page 2, just kind of quick update on our governmental practice. Again, we continue to be the largest niche in the firm, representing about 28% of the firm practice. We had over 400 total governments that we served in the southeast part of the United States, and that includes about 115 cities. And also 115 of our governments received the GFOA Award in Excellence in Financial Reporting, including the city of Fairburn. Turn to page 3. Again, I was the partner responsible for the overall audit engagement with about 21 years of experience now. This year I had a different partner to do the quality assurance review. It's our first time looking at anything pertaining to the city of Fairburn. Just wanted to have some new, fresh set of eyes kind of looking at things. And it was Meredith Lipson, and she has about 24 years of experience. And then Josh Carroll was the engagement director or manager with 13 years of experience. And then we had two other staff kind of helping out as well. But all of us spend 100% of our time doing governmental audits. And then down below is just, again, other industries that we provide services to and other services that we provide other than your traditional accounting and tax services. Page 4, again, the most important thing is, you know, well, who's responsibility of the financial statements? It's the mayor, the council, and management. Our responsibility as your external and independent auditors is to give an opinion on the financial statements, and we've issued an unmodified opinion or a clean opinion, which is what you hope to get from the external and independent audit. And as you can see, the audit report date was as of March 23rd, 2020, which means that the city has met the March 31st deadline. And, again, this was right during the beginning of the pandemic here in the United States, and management staff worked, you know, remotely to get things done so that we can issue on time. So, again, hats off to management staff and as well as the governance of you all. As the mayor and city council for doing a great job and ensuring that you had the right resources in place to meet this deadline and have a clean opinion as well. Page 6, as far as our relationship with management, we received full cooperation from the city's management staff and others. There were no disagreements with management on accounting issues or financial reporting matters. We did have some audit adjustments. And I'll talk about one that did result in a finding a little later in the presentation. There were no past audit adjustments, meaning that anything that came to our attention, we went ahead and proposed those adjustments to the city's financial statements, and those adjustments are reflected in the city's general ledger. Page 7, as far as our independence, we are independent of the city and its financial reporting process in accordance with AICPA professional standards. There were no fees paid to Marlin Jenkins for any type of management advisory services that would have impacted our independence as your external and independent auditor. All right, the next few slides start on page 8, kind of goes over some financial trends. The first one is looking at your proprietary funds, operating revenues over the last 6 years, looking at the electric fund. You can see in the prior year, in 2018, you had about $9.4 million of operating revenues. And then for 2019, you had about $9.7 million in operating revenues. Water and sewer went up from $7 million to $7.3 million. And then your other proprietary funds went from $1.3 million in the prior year to $2.1 million in the current year. So you can see that upward trend continues. It's what you will hope to see. 2020 may be a little different. But, again, over the last several years, you can see that upward trend for your operating revenues for your enterprise funds. Page 9 is looking at your fund balance for your general fund and your other governmental funds. Of course, your general fund is your main operating fund, and then these other governmental funds, fund balances represents your special revenue funds and your capital projects funds. I always like showing this slide here. Really shows where you all came from coming out of the recession in 2009, where you had a deficit of $397,000 in your main operating fund, your general fund. And that seeing that upward trend is awesome. You had a $7.6 million fund balance in the general fund in 2018. That increased about $4.1 million in 2019, reaching $11.7 million of total fund balance in your general fund. And then your other governmental funds went from $3.2 million in 2018 to $4.7 million in 2019. Now, again, most people think that fund balance equates to cash. And a lot of times that's not the case. But for you all as a city, and again, this is a snapshot in time at 9/30/2019, your cash balance in the general fund was roughly $12.3 million. That's a liquidity of about 111% compared to total fund balance. So that's awesome. Even if you look at your unassigned fund balance, it came in at about $11.1 million. Versus total fund balance of $11.7 million. So, again, you all have done a great job at building up these reserves. Mm-hmm. And last time I talked to you all, I mentioned that, you know, experts say that recessions occur over about 11 years, and here we are. You know, no one could have predicted that this next recession would be a health crisis recession. But, again, this having that kind of reserves can help weather the storm a little better than it would have been had you had a deficit in fund balance of $397,000 that you did back in 2009. So, again, outstanding job in building up those reserves. On page 10 is looking at your capital projects fund balance over the last 7 years. Again, this is your GO bond capital projects. You know, you issued about $10.4 million in fiscal year 2011 to fund various construction projects, and so you had a lot of the bond proceeds being spent over the last few years, and so your fund balance went from $1.7 million in 2018 to about $1.9 million in 2019. As of 9/30/2019, you have unspent bond proceeds of about $1 million. Page 11 is looking at, again, your general fund. We're looking at the fund balance as a percentage of total expenditures over the last 11 years. Again, a good rule of thumb is to have anywhere from 2 to 3 months reserve. This is pre-pandemic, or 16 to 25% reserves. And you can see how you all have increased that percentage. Last year, it was about 57%, or it represents about 6.8 months reserve. And for 2019, your general fund is 84% or 10 months reserve. So, again, having that kind of reserve going into this pandemic, I would rather be in that situation. And a lot of cities are not in that situation of having 10 months reserve. So, again, good job in building up those reserves. All right, page 12 is looking at all of your governmental funds. Fund balance as a percentage of total expenditures over the last 11 years. And again, you can see you're still strong there. You don't have a fund that has a huge deficit fund balance that's bringing that percentage down. It actually increased compared to your general fund percentage of 84%. So all your governmental funds, that percentage is 91%, or almost 11 months of reserve, compared to the prior year of 61%, or 7.3 months reserve in fiscal year 2018. Page 13, you know, coming out of the recession, you all had to depend on your enterprise funds for transfers in to cover the deficits and the shortfalls that you were having in the general fund coming out of the recession back in 2009. You had transfers in of about $4.3 million in 2009, and now you're not that dependent on transfers from your enterprise fund. This current year, 2019, you only had about $1.2 million of transfers in to the general fund compared to $1.5 million in the prior year. So, again, the city was able to build up the fund balance in the general fund without relying on significant transfers from your enterprise funds over the last few years. The next slide on page 14 is looking at your net position for all of your governmental activities. And again, this is all of your governmental funds, your general funds, special revenue funds, and capital project funds on a full accrual basis with capital assets and long-term debt reported and reflected within those statements. And so you can see that your total net position went from $33.9 million in 2018 to $42.7 million in 2019. So the breakdown of that net position, you had about $27.9 million invested in capital assets net of related debt, about $3.7 million restricted by third parties, and then you had $11.1 million of unrestricted net position, which may be used to meet city's ongoing obligations to its citizens and creditors. So that's pretty good where a lot of governments are showing deficits in their unrestricted net position. You all are showing $11.1 million, and it's so ironic that that $11.1 million is the same amount that you have in unassigned fund balance in your general fund. So I don't think I've ever really seen that before, so that's awesome. So, again, great job in building up your net position over the last several years. So the city's financial condition at 9/30/2019, it was really pretty good compared to a lot of other cities. So great job with management as well as with the governance of the mayor and city council. So with that, before I go into the finding and the management point, do I have any questions on the financial trends? Or y'all can ask at the end as well.
Go on with the witnesses, and then we'll have the questions at the end.
Great. Okay. All right. So on page 15, we did have one finding. Just a slight oversight dealing with accounting for leases. The city basically entered into an equipment lease agreement back in January 2019, but didn't capture that lease in its general ledger or in its capital assets and long-term debt schedules. So we had to update the capital asset roll forward in the tune of about $101,000 to record the capital assets as well as in your long-term debt schedule, we had to include capital lease payable. And then at the fund level, we had to recognize proceeds from the issuance of this lease and then capital outlay expenditures of that same amount in accordance with the modified accrual base of accounting within your general fund. So, again, just got to make sure we examine all leases to make sure that those leases are accounted for properly within your financial statements as well as your general ledger. Page 16, we had two management points, one dealing with outstanding checks that have been outstanding for at least 5 years or over 5 years. We recognized about 204 checks that came to the amount of about $40,000. And, again, if you've exhausted all of your efforts in trying to contact these individuals and you haven't been successful, then you should turn that list of checks along with the money and any contact information over to the state in accordance with Georgia's cheat rules. And then the second management point deals with the pension census data. We looked at a sample of 25 and noticed that two of the employees, the information on the census data didn't agree with the employee's personnel file. So we always want to make sure that the census data information that's submitted from the city to the actuaries is as accurate as possible. However, these exceptions didn't have any significant effect on the actuaries' assumptions. But again, we just want to make sure that information is as accurate as possible before submitting it to the actuaries. Page 17, we go into the GASB pronouncements. I do have something to share with you all. Joe Black, he's been a partner in our Atlanta office. Very technical person, very sharp, been with us for over 15 years. He has left the firm. We're sad to say that he's left. We hear that he's leaving or has left, but we're so proud of him because he's going to be the next new chairperson of GASB. So we can start blaming him for all these new GASB standards that come out in the near future. But we're proud of him. He's going to be serving a seven-year term. He's moving to Connecticut. And so, again, we wish him well, and I think it says a lot that we have a partner from our governmental practice, or from the firm, to be the chairperson of GASB, who sets all of the accounting standards for federal, state, and local governments to follow. So we're very proud of that. With that being said, we do have I did want to mention a couple of these GASB standards. GASB Statement Number 87 deals with leases. And, again, this will require all lease agreements to be recorded as a liability under the full accrual accounting. So we're recommending that all of our clients kind of gather up all of the lease agreements, whether it's where you are a lessee or a lessor, to make sure that you implement this standard, which will be applicable for you all in September 30, 2021. So basically, as a lessee, you would recognize a lease liability and a lease asset at the commencement of the lease term. And then as a lessor, you will recognize a lease receivable and a deferred inflow of resources at the commencement of the lease term. So I think I saw on your agenda you all are entering into a lease agreement, a 10-year lease agreement, where I think you're going to be a lessor. So when this standard is implemented, whatever your balance is to be received, you will need to record a lease receivable and a deferred inflow of resources, and you will recognize revenue each year over the term of the lease agreement. And so, again, evaluate all of your lease agreements to make sure that you will be in a position to implement this standard when it comes applicable in 2021. The next one I want to talk about is GASB Statement 88, dealing with certain disclosures relating to debt, including direct borrowings. Direct borrowings are when a government enters into a loan agreement with a lender, and direct placements are when a government issues a debt security directly to an investor. And so this was implemented for the current year. It enhances your footnotes and breaks your debt between those two categories. This standard requires, if you had a line of credit, an unused line of credit, that you disclose in your footnotes what that amount is. So any unused lines of credit would be disclosed in your footnotes. It also requires assets pledge as collateral for debt to be disclosed. Also, like terms specified in the debt agreements relating to significant events of default with the finance-related consequences, termination events with finance-related consequences, and subjective acceleration clauses. So this standard requires all that information to be disclosed in your footnotes. And so this was implemented during fiscal year 2019, and so you'll see that distinction within your footnotes. Page 18, GASB Statement 91 deals with conduit debt. This will be applicable for September 30th, 2022. You all do have conduit debt disclosed in your footnotes in the amount of $5 million that was issued on behalf of others by your development authority. So basically, under the current standard, you know, you have a lot of development authorities that may have issued a lot of debt in the past and that they have trouble obtaining what the outstanding balance is at year end. And so under the current standard, if you have those difficulties of tracking down what that outstanding balance is, the standard allows for you to only disclose what the issuance amount is. Well, this standard says that you no longer can do that. You have to record or disclose what the outstanding balance is. And so I encourage all of my clients to make sure you gather that information prior to year end because you will have to make sure you disclose the outstanding balance. So let's make sure we keep up with this particular conduing debt that's currently disclosed in your footnotes. And then if you enter into any other conduing debt agreements, just make sure you are able to gather that information on a yearly basis. Page 19, the last thing, we continue to offer free continuing education classes to our clients free of charge. And you can see the various topics that are being taught at these classes. And we appreciate you all allowing your staff to attend those courses. And again, if you all would like to be included on that invite, let me or Paige know, and we'll make sure to include you on it, as well as for our governmental newsletters that we send out sporadically throughout the year. That concludes my presentation. I really appreciate the opportunity to serve the city of Fairburn. Look forward to continuing to work with you all in the near future. And again, great job to you all. The numbers look really good. Really enjoy working with you all to meet the deadlines and to ensure that your financial statements were well prepared and submitted to the state as well as to GFOA for participation in the award. With that being said, I can address any questions that you all may have.
Thank you so much, Mr. Moses. Great presentation. But before we get to the questions, I would like to say a great thank you to Angela Jackson, who has worked very hard to make sure this audit was completed in a timely manner. But not only Angela, all of the employees over in our finance department, Stephanie, Adam Rose, and our budget analyst, Roderick Taylor, they all worked very hard to get this done. And so my hat goes out to you all today with kudos and to say a heartfelt thanks to you all. I do appreciate all the work that you all have done. And also with the City Council working very closely to make sure we had a budget that was in line and that people followed their budget, line items. And we've just done a great job. I'm really proud of what we've accomplished from 2009. We've come a long way. And we will continue to move this city forward in a very positive manner. With that being said, the floor is now open for any questions or comments from the City Council members.
All right, this is Mayor Pro Tem Smallwood with one question.
Yes.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Moses, for that very extensive audit. I just had one question just to help me understand what it is. Page 16, the outstanding checks for roughly $41,000. What is that actually?
Okay, yeah. So let's say that you all wrote a check to pay Maureen Jenkins for services rendered. Not that we'll never not cash that check, but let's say that we never cash that check. Y'all hounded us for the last several years trying to reach out to us to see, hey, you know, we notice this check hasn't cleared the bank, but you are unsuccessful in getting in contact with us to track down that check. So this represents checks that have been issued by the city to other parties, and the check has never cleared. Now, it could be a situation that some of these checks are really old, and they may have cleared, but never was updated within your your system and your bank reconciliations. And so I've had that to happen at some clients where they went back and did some research and contacted the banks and actually found out the check did clear, but they missed it on the bank reconciliation.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. Thank you
and
so much.
Mr. Moses, maybe that's something we need to do before we turn $40,000 over to the Georgia Department of Revenue.
Yes.
Because it's just going to sit there until someone claims it. At what point will they return that money to us? Do they have so many years for someone to claim it?
I don't think the state. The state won't return it.
Okay.
They'll use it. I don't know how long it will sit. Maybe the attorney could address that, but I don't think they would return it to the local governments.
Randy?
I'm not sure the state of Georgia does anything to actually try and find the rightful owners of that money, and it becomes a
state.
Yeah.
So it's going to be my suggestion. Angela, you're on the line, right?
Yes, ma'am.
It's going to be my suggestion that that we go back. We have a very good relationship with United Community Bank, and even if we have to pay a fee, for them to look up certain items for us, we need to find out whether or not some of these 204 checks have cleared before we actually send that money to the Georgia Department of Revenue. So at some point, Mr. Moses, how long do we have? Do you think is a decent time frame to look for these checks before we turn these funds over?
I mean, there's no set time. I mean, we only made this as a recommendation. It's not a finding on our end. I mean, technically you're not in compliance with the state law, but I think if you just, what you just recommended and work towards that, I think you'll be fine.
Okay, good. Thank you. Counsel, next question.
This is Councilwoman Davis.
Councilwoman Davis.
Yes, Mayor, thank you. I wanted to just ask Mr. Moses, or you, Mayor, what processes do we have in place now that would eliminate a situation like this in the future?
With the checks?
Yes, with the checks.
Okay. What had happened, Councilwoman Davis, is we found, and I'll let Angela speak to it also, we found that bank statements were not being reconciled on a monthly basis. And I think we can catch a lot of this if we do. They were not being reconciled. When I came in office, there were we had batches of bank statements that needed to be reconciled. Stephanie worked really hard. And Adam, really hard, I guess about 3 or 4 months straight to get us up to par. And I think right now Stephanie has already reconciled the bank statements for March. We have 19 accounts here in the city of Fairburn, and it takes time to reconcile those accounts. Now, all of those accounts don't have activity every month. But the general fund account has blue gobs of activity every month, because every week we're sending out anywhere from 50, 60 to 70 checks. Now, that's the least we sent out. We have sent out over 100 checks per week in the city of Fairburn. So it's my suggestion that we just make sure that these checks are these bank accounts are reconciled on a timely manner, which is what's being done right now. Angela, you want to speak to that?
Yes, ma'am, Mary. Everything that you said is absolutely correct. So we're reconciling those and then going through some of the checks. Some of the 204 date back to years and years ago. And so we're going through those to make sure that they're actually outstanding checks and not items that have been voided but just were not voided correctly. So we are looking into that and working toward fixing that problem.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Jackson and Mayor. Thank you.
You're welcome. Next question.
Yes, Councilwoman Portis Jones.
Okay, Portis Jones.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. And thank you, Mr. Moses, for the report. Each year, you really do present us with a thorough audit report, and it's very much appreciated. A couple questions. One, could you state for the record the date of this, the time frame of this audit, please?
Yes, and so we normally... So the audit report date is as of March 23rd, I believe. And so what we normally do, we send out an engagement letter right at the end of September. And then we come out, and we also send out a PBC letter, or what we call is a prepared by a client list of items that we request for the audit. And then we actually come out maybe a day or two in December, or sometimes we'll wait until the beginning of January to come out and do some preliminary work or planning. And then after that, maybe a week or two later, maybe mid-January, we start the field work audit. And sometimes we're in the field for 2 weeks if everything's in good shape. And then we may have a few open items that we resolve back in the office over a few weeks. And then we, once all of that's resolved and we work on drafting the statements, we'll provide the financial statements to management to review. That's normally around maybe the latter part of February or early March. And then we give them time, about a week or so, to draft the MD&A, the management discussion and analysis, provide the statistical session, the letter of transmittal, things of that nature. And then we review it, and then at that point we take it to the next level of the partner review, and then we send it to processing and ready to issue in March.
Okay, so what is the time frame of the data that you are reviewing and evaluating for the audit report?
Now, as far as the data, it's on a fiscal year basis from June 30th, October 1st, through October 1st, 2018, through September 30th, 2019. So it's a 12-month period for that fiscal year end. Now, there are some things that we look at outside of that period. For instance, if the city says we have $1 million of accounts payable at year end, at 9/30/2019, we'll look at your check registers from October 2019 through probably January or February of 2020 to see if there's anything that was paid subsequent to year end that should have been recorded as a liability. We look at your minutes up into the audit report date to see if there's anything in your minutes that we need to reflect in your financial statements or disclosed in your footnotes as a subsequent event footnote disclosure. The attorney letters, we get the attorneys to provide the letters probably right at the beginning of field work, and then towards the audit report date, within 10 business days, we'll have that attorney to update the letter to see if anything has changed that we need to consider for contingent liabilities and things of that nature. Receivables, we look at if you have, $5 million of receivables at year end, we look to see subsequent to year end if those amounts were collected, things of that nature. So we do look past your fiscal year end for proper cutoff procedures, but the main data that we're looking at is within your fiscal year. All of your monthly bank reconciliations is for the fiscal year end period.
Okay, thank you. And so going into fiscal year 2020, we were the U.S. economy, the state of Georgia and Fulton County and Fairburn specifically, we were all doing extremely well economically speaking, and then the pandemic has hit. So my question to you is, what advice now are you giving clients because now we're 7 months into this fiscal year. And as mm-hmm. you began your presentation, you know, you talked about, you mentioned the pandemic and its potential negative impact on all of us in 2021. So what advice are you giving your clients, or what advice can you give us in terms mm-hmm. of what we should do to maintain the glowing reserves that we mm-hmm. have and to be prepared for the huge fiscal downturn that is predicted to happen?
Yes, sure, I can address that. And so, you know, you want to make sure, of course, on a monthly basis, you know, starting back in March, that you're looking at, you know, the current period versus the last fiscal year period. No, I'm sorry, the last period for that month that you're comparing to. So you're looking at March 31st, 2020, you want to compare it to March 31st, 2019, and evaluate those variances. We all know that, you know, sales taxes are going to be down. You know, you're probably in the fall for property taxes. You know, you may end up collecting less property taxes in 2020 compared to 2019, although you had an increase in tax revenues for fiscal year 2019 over 2018. So, you know, kind of monitor those main revenue sources. You might have to, you know, delay some major capital projects that you were currently looking to fund this year. You might want to put a freeze on new hires. You know, just kind of really monitor and control the budget, the budgeted expenditures, and you know, on a monthly basis, and look where you can kind of cut costs just to be able to weather the storm, so that you don't eat away your reserves so much. But we all know that hotel, motel tax revenues and sale tax revenues are going to continue to be down. And like I said, the uncertainty surrounding this, we don't know how long this is going to last. Hopefully this next wave of the CARES Act will trickle down to state and local governments, where they will provide some funding to you all, like back in 2009 with the Arrow grants. And so maybe there'll be some CARE grants that will be provided to state and local governments that you all can apply for and get as well. And I really do think that they're going to help out state and local governments, because you all are impacted by this. So I think if you all, I'm sure you all have been doing your comparisons to the prior period on a monthly basis, and kind of keep track of those revenue sources that are declining, and then also monitor your monitoring your expenditures as well. So that's kind of what I'm recommending. I've been recommending every year, if you all recall, about building those reserves up, and you all have done that. So, but I don't think no one has reserves to carry them, you know, 2 years, from the previous fiscal year end, but at least you all have a good starting point going into this pandemic. And if you're, again, monitoring those declining revenues and then look at ways to cut your budget on certain expenditures, maybe put a freeze on new hires. You know, I don't know if you're at the point of doing furlough days, but, you know, that's an option down the road as well. And then just delay certain projects, you know, until things can return to a new norm. Does that address your question?
Yes, it does. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Are there any other questions from any other council members? No other questions? Any other comments? Mr. Moses, thank you so much. I appreciate you coming on tonight and giving us a thorough presentation of our FY 1920 audit.
Yes.
It was a pleasure working with you, and it was more than a pleasure to work with the staff who came out to the city and spent days with us just security information and looking through records, and they did a fantastic job. And so I just want to give my kudos to them also. And would you please relay that to I think there were two of them that came out and spent just about a week or so with us. And
yes.
Just tell them we do appreciate it.
I surely will, and thanks. Thanks again. Y'all take care.
Oh, okay, take care, and thank you.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, the next item on the agenda is the adoption of the City Council minutes. This was a telephonic council meeting that was held on April the 27th. Council, you've reviewed the minutes. Are there any corrections or additions to the April 27th minutes? Hearing none, is there a motion on the floor to approve the minutes of April 27th?
Excuse me, Mayor.
Yes.
Sorry, Mayor. Just a couple of corrections, and I already called the clerk in reference to them. But if you look at Roman numeral 6, the fourth line down should read 3% for the 2020-2021.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Also, if you go over to the second page, number 2, the finance department, going down to the fourth line, that should read 2020, fiscal year 2020.
Okay.
And then if you go down to Roman numeral 7, the second line, it should read, make the food drive in support of two labor unions, not supported.
In support. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Council, do you have – thank you so much, Mr. Councilman Whitmore. Council members, do you have any other corrections? Madam Clerk, please note these corrections for the final minutes that will be placed out on the board on tomorrow.
Yes,
is there a motion on the floor to approve?
So moved. Mayor Pro Tem Smallwood.
Motion made by Mayor Pro Tem Smallwood. Is there a second?
Second, Councilman Whitmore.
Second, Councilman Whitmore. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 All those opposed? The minutes passed 6-0. The next item on the agenda is item number 6, which is the adoption of the City Council agenda for tonight. We have a discussion tonight, Governor Kemp's emergency ordinance in response to the COVID-19 pandemic. That is set to expire on May 13th. The next item on our agenda is going to be under the regular agenda items, is item number 1 from Parks and Recreation, and that's for Mayor and Council to approve the mental fitness agreement for use of Fairburn Youth Center located at 149 Southwest Broad Street in Fairburn. And item number 2 is from our city clerk for Mayor and Council to approve the amended 2020 meeting schedule. And the last item on the agenda tonight is item number 3 under property management for Mayor and Council to approve the 10-year lease agreement between the City of Fairburn and Tryon Studios, MFI, for building number 3 located at Fairburn Educational Campus, which is at 336 West Broad Street in Fairburn. Is there a motion on the floor to approve the adoption of the City Council agenda for tonight?
Councilman Heath, so moved.
Councilwoman Heath made the motion to adopt this City Council agenda for tonight, and it was seconded by Councilwoman Davis. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? That motion carries 6-0. The next item on the agenda is just a general discussion of the Governor Kemp's emergency ordinance in response to the COVID-19 pandemic that is set to expire on May 13, 2020. Randy, are you still on the line?
Yes, ma'am. I'm here.
Okay. Randy and I have had a conversation about if we need to put anything else in place, because the governor's ordinance, emergency ordinance, actually expires on May 13th. I know if we're going to continue to pay hazard pay, we're going to have to put something in place. So it's just for a general discussion. So, Randy, I'm going to open the floor up to you first so you can give us any insight on where you think we should go from here.
Thank you, Mary. Good evening to council members. I think that we should begin by just sort of noting what we have in place at this time. And I noticed really just this afternoon that the ordinance was not in the council packet, so I sent it to everyone, and I hope everyone had a chance to get it and maybe have it in front of you. But what this ordinance is, and if you could, at the very top of the page, you would see it's identified as third emergency ordinance dated 4/20/2020. And what this ordinance is in its current form is just the compilation of all of those actions that were taken. For example, if you looked at Section 17 of that ordinance, you'd see where the additional compensation for the some of the city employees was put into place, as the mayor just described. Also, one of the things that was discussed at the last meeting and how this ordinance is in effect today was that we agreed that we would make it the termination of it correspond with the governor's executive order declaring the emergency, and his order and now our ordinance are scheduled to expire on Wednesday at midnight. The governor has not, as of right now, acted to either extend his order or to modify it, but I expect that he will. Quite possibly tomorrow he might do that. So at this point in time, I think that, you know, one way that we can address this is to authorize that the ordinance be extended in conformity with whatever the governor decides, because as you all are aware, the governor has made a point of adopting these orders under his authority such that they preempt local governments from acting in ways that are more restrictive. Now, I don't believe that means that if the city wanted to, if the governor were to lift his order altogether, but the city wanted to continue closure of its own parks and its own buildings, I believe that the city could do that. So those are the kind of things that are contained within our ordinance right now. And I suggested to the mayor that we might ought to have some discussion about this and what the consensus of the council might be as to how we might proceed depending on the governor's actions with respect to his own order. This is an aside, but I would note that just late this afternoon, the Chief Justice of the Georgia Supreme Court extended the emergency order for the judicial system until June 12th. I don't know that that would have any impact on what the governor might do. I don't know if there was any coordination in that date, but I do know that that happened just this afternoon. So there may be some type of continuation with targeted relaxation, which is what the governor has already supported with respect to some businesses and whatnot. So I thought it would be a good idea if we just tried to get some consensus from council about how we might like to proceed at this point in time, depending on how the governor might act. And, of course, that's all very speculative. But we do have a couple of things contained in this ordinance, though, that are going to expire at midnight on Wednesday, such as the enhanced pay for police officers and firefighters at this point in time in municipal buildings are still closed to the public. The parks are still closed. And those things are covered in this ordinance, and they will expire Wednesday at midnight unless council decides to continue those.
Okay, council, you've heard the remarks from our city attorney. Let's have a discussion on what you would like to see done. We're waiting on the governor. I had a conversation this afternoon. In fact, I had a conference call this afternoon with some other mayors, and we're all basically kind of just waiting to see what's what. There are quite a few cities around the state that have just completely opened up. Some of them are still closed. Their government offices are closed like ours are. No one can walk into any of our offices in the city of Fairburn. They're all closed. Utility, city hall, municipal court, planning and zoning, police department, fire department, all of those offices are closed. So we just need to just kind of play it by ear, or we want to wait until tomorrow to see what the governor is going to do, or do we want to make a decision tonight? Exactly what we feel like we need to do for the city. I've had a conversation with Angela, and we ran some numbers on hazard pay, how far we can go with hazard pay within the budget where we are right now, because we took the hazard pay from the city administrator's budget, and I think we also pulled some money from another line item. But we do have enough to carry in hazard pay, I think, for another, what, Angela, 2-3 pay periods? Angela, how many pay periods are we looking at? Three more pay periods. So
yes,
without us having to find money from someplace else, we do have enough to do our hazard pay. Our hazard pay is running us anywhere from $18,000 to $20,000 a pay period. Just want to make you aware of that. Police officers, fire department, our frontline workers, and also some workers over in our street department are getting hazard pay, and that's it. So the floor is open.
Yes.
I think right now I'm going to be on lookout tomorrow to see if the governor comes out with any new recommendations, or if he's just going to open everything up. I've gotten a lot of calls. I've gotten emails from people who are ready to get back into the park, and I just don't think it's time. But it's a decision that I think it's an individual decision that people's going to have to make. And if the governor tomorrow opens up parks, it behooves us to decide whether or not we're going to go with his recommendation, or if we're going to keep our park and rec center closed. So with that being said, Councilwoman Davis, were you asking to speak?
Yes, Mayor. Thank you. I'm looking at, can we get an actual date in reference to the hazard pay? You said three more pay periods. What actual date would that be, the end date of those years?
You will be talking. Well, this month has the month of May. So you talk about two more pay periods in May, and then you talk about one pay period in June. May had three pay periods.
Right. What I'm thinking, and this is just throwing this out here, is that if we extend our emergency ordinance tonight, to that particular date for the three pay period of hazard pay for our hazard pay essential employees. And then, depending on what the governor does tomorrow, then maybe we can agree to give the attorney, Randy, and you the decision to include whatever his declarations are, or we could come back with a special council meeting.
And may I interrupt also just to point something I meant to bring up. Also included in this is a decision about, because you had just mentioned opening up the planning and zoning meeting.
Right.
You know, that's an example of a city board meeting, and under our ordinance, those meetings are canceled right now, so we would need to write in some clarification on their meetings if we want them to start having those meetings, even virtually at this point. Sorry I didn't bring that up later, but I wanted to make that part of the discussion as well.
Okay, and I had a conference call today, this morning around 11 o'clock, Randy, with Valerie and Tarika.
Yes, ma'am.
Because we have some, we have a variance that needs to be taken care of, and then we have a couple of other items that's kind of pressing right now. And so we were trying to figure out how do we get these items handled. So Valerie and Tarika and I did have a conference call, and we were actually looking at the virtual meetings. So we'll put whatever we need to in place to see when and how. But I think our first date, even trying to do something virtual with planning and zoning, was in July.
I see.
So I just need council to give some direction as to we don't know what the governor is going to say tomorrow, and I know he's going to say something, but I have no idea. I've been talking to a couple of legislators that has close ties with the governor, but he has not revealed what he's going to say as far as this pandemic and ending it on May 13th. We just don't know. So if council wants us to wait until tomorrow to see what the governor says on tomorrow, and we take it from there, we can do that. We'll have to have a special call meeting. It has to be advertised. So just your thoughts on what are your feelings?
Mayor Pro Tem Smallwood, could I ask Randy a clarifying question?
Sure.
Yes, sir.
Sure.
Okay. Now, Randy, you said even though he may, we don't know what he's going to do, but he may open up parks. Did we still have the ability to keep ours closed without, you know, breaking the law and, you know, because you, like you said, some of his stuff overrides what we can do? I just wanted to ask that question. Did I hear you say that?
The state of Georgia has already opened their state parks.
Oh.
Yeah, that happened. That happened with his last executive order.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Talking about, I think what is preempted by the state of Georgia and his orders would be things such as closing restaurants. But when we're talking about municipal buildings and municipal parks, we still have the ability to control parks and buildings.
Okay, well, I'll just state my will then, you know, because like I said, we know then that it's already opened up. But, I mean, the data is still showing that we are presently in a pandemic. So, of course, we are a body. But my will is that we can still limit activity as we can, because like I said, people are ready to get out, but you know, the data is still showing that we're in a pandemic. So I am for still limiting as much activity as we can.
Right, I understand.
This is Councilwoman Portis Jones.
Okay, Ms. Jones, Portis Jones.
Yes. I would agree with Mayor Pro Tem Smallwood. I think we should continue to limit activity. The case numbers are still high, and I applaud the testing that we're going to have, or that we had here today, and two more I think are coming. And so that I agree we need to continue to limit the activity. I also would ask that we increase our participation as a city in trying to provide safety packages to our residents, to continue with the education, that we continue to keep all city offices closed, that we continue to close the parks, although I would agree that we might consider a gradual opening of the park, but we need to put a plan in place about how that might happen and what we need to do as a city to ensure that the social distancing is happening, and that is going to be the case with our youth center and any camps and activities we have at the plaza, et cetera. So I thought I had heard last week that the governor, he had lifted some things but said other things needed to stay in place until June 12th. And so I'm inclined to think that he is going to continue in that vein. And I think we should. We can always reduce if the governor has something less than the June 12th. But I think we should put that in place tonight. And I also agree that we should extend the hazard pay for the essential employees as we've defined them in our resolution through that time period as well. Thank you.
You're welcome. So, Mr.
Mayor,
Councilman Heath, thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Randy, my thought on this is that when we originally set this up, it had a certain date and time that this would run to. So in my thinking, aren't we going to have a certain date and time at the expiration before we put in this forward?
Well, Councilman Heath, we do have, of course, right now we do have a date certain and time.
Correct.
And that is a reflection of the decision that was made at the last meeting to have our ordinance correspond with the governor's ordinance. For example, I think tonight one of the things, if we can get a consensus on it, would be that we also would continue ours to whatever date that the governor might extend his executive order, and then also modify our ordinance to the extent that he puts in place anything that preempts any of the actions that we've taken. But at the same time, preserving a couple of things that I've heard discussed here so far, which is preserve the hazard pay until that, at least until that date, and continue to close the park, the city parks, and the city buildings, at least until we have developed some sort of a plan for reopening them. I think that's what I've heard so far. And I think if that represents a general consensus of council, I might suggest that after we hear how the governor is going to address his own order, and it's interesting, and it's a great point from Councilwoman Portis Jones that he has previously used that June 12th date because, as I as I said a few minutes ago, that does correspond with the new order just this afternoon from the Georgia Supreme Court Chief Justice, who also extended the judicial emergency in the state until June 12th. So there may be, you know, some backdoor coordination going on with those dates, and we may very well see a continuation of the governor's order tomorrow. But once he makes that decision, based on the things that I'm hearing, we could prepare an amended city emergency ordinance and then circulate that for comments by council and put it into place without, in the case we don't hear any objections to how that is written. You know, one of the things that was provided in this ordinance, going all the way back to maybe the first time that we met by telephone, was that amendments to this ordinance can be crafted and put into place by the mayor in consultation with the city attorney.
Yeah.
And we have done, that's why you're looking at the third example of this ordinance, where we have put those things into place, and I saw a need several weeks ago, as mayor would confirm, that we really need to pull all this stuff together into one document, or we were going to end up potentially, you know, with a book full of these things and being very hard to follow. So based on what I've heard, I might suggest that one way to deal with this is, you know, listen, I'd like to hear any other comments, obviously, but based on what I've heard, I think depending on what the governor does tomorrow, I can put together an ordinance. I'm going to work with Valerie on that. I think I had told you all I'm going to be on the road tomorrow, Wednesday and Thursday, but I've already discussed with Valerie how I can work with her by telephone to get her to make some changes to this, and then we can circulate it and see if it's okay with council to move forward and with some changes.
Yes, Mayor. I just didn't want us to have to go back and publicize that another meeting was going to be held and all that. I mean, I'm in favor of extending the pay and hazardous duty pay and that type of stuff. So, you know, just whatever you can work out would be great with me.
Well, I think we might be able to do that, Councilman Heath, as long as we can craft a document based on whatever the governor says that can be circulated and everyone can agree that everyone can agree they're agreeable with it.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Well, the Councilman.
Okay. How about we do this, if we might, and that's move right along with what Randy has suggested. And go from there, depending upon what the governor has to say tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Councilman Whitmore, I think I heard you.
Yes, ma'am.
Did I? Okay.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. I think basically I'm in agreement with what Randy just stated, and also the fact that you and him had worked together and put additional renditions together to ensure that everything was in one place. So I think all of us would agree that whatever the governor decides to do, if he extends it out to the 12th, we would go out to the 12th as well. And I also would agree that as far as the opening up the parks and everything, I think that should be done in phases. Again, I think we all have our different opinions about whether or not the governor should have done what he did. And I think that overall, we just want to ensure that we do not have the spreading of this virus throughout our city. So I'm in agreement with you and Randy working out the details based on the governor's new order that comes out possibly on Wednesday.
Okay.
Sorry, you all. I have my ear parts in, and it looks like they're going dead on me. Can you all hear me?
Yes.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, okay. Yes, we can hear you.
Okay.
Okay, so it seems to be consensus, Randy, that you and I will work together after we hear from the governor, potentially on tomorrow, and then we can put something else in place and distribute to council members and then sign off on it, and we'll have a fourth document, okay?
Yes, ma'am. I think that's as good as a good of a plan that we can really come up with at this point, not knowing what he might do. But I certainly heard a couple of things that we will want to incorporate into that, and that is that some kind of extension of the pay and a continuation of the closure of municipal buildings, and I apologize for that car that just went by that was really loud. we'll have an extension of pay to some point in time that makes sense depending on what he might decide, and then a plant or at least a direction that the opening of the parks and the municipal buildings will be done with some after in a gradual fashion with some sort of plan put in place, and I certainly can work with Valerie and have something crafted based on what he decides, and then we can circulate that to everyone and then move forward from there.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much. Just a footnote about closures. The municipal court has been closed since, I think, around March 12th, Randy.
Yes.
And then Chief Justice Melton has extended it now until June 12th. So that has placed a really large backlog of cases in municipal court. Just want you to be aware that January, February citations that were issued are really now being rescheduled till July and August. Be also mindful that police are still out doing their jobs. They're still issuing citations. So whenever they issue any citations now, they probably will not get heard before October, November. It just depends. Code enforcement is still out working. They're issuing citations. So all of those cases are being rescheduled, and that's the reason why we have two people working in municipal court, because we have to get these cases rescheduled for a future date. And like I said, police officers and code enforcement are still working every day. So with the June 12th date now before us, they're probably, if they go back June 12th, they probably be hearing cases from January and February or March. We just don't know. But I know they're working hard over there. They bring trays and trays of mail to City Hall at least twice a week of rescheduling cases. So I wanted council to be aware of that.
The next Mayor, question, Councilwoman Portis Jones.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes. And also, Randy, if you can respond to this as well. Given this new environment that we're operating in, has there been some discussion among the or in the judiciary system on how they might operate virtually or use of technology?
Yes, ma'am, there has been some discussion. I'll tell you, our experience in our own firm is that for the most part, the litigation end of our practice has been shut down. But in the U.S. District Court, one of my partners, Meredith Germain, actually argued a motion in front of the United States District Court judge. I think it was last week. So, yes, we're seeing discussions about it, but we're not really seeing much action on the state level. And I don't know how much longer that can actually keep going. Obviously, they are doing criminal work. They're continuing to do arraignments and that sort of thing, which they have to do. But there has not been any real evidence of a coordinated effort to try and implement rules for that, to do appearances by video and to implement, you know, technology to do things that normally require in-court appearances. But I think part of the, if I could and speculate about it a little bit, I think part of that is that no one really knew how long this was going to last. And the longer that it goes on, and now we've just seen this is another full month of the emergency order from the judiciary, I expect we're going to see some of that. And it will trickle down, hopefully, into to the municipal court level, because the municipal courts in this state handle as much caseload as any courts in the state do. And everybody is now facing these huge backlogs, and really something is going to have to be done. So I expect that's going to happen, but I haven't really seen any real effort to implement anything right now, and I think the reason for it is because no one just realized that it was going to go on as long as it did. And now it's gone on as long as it is, I think you're going to see more interest in trying to figure out a way to move some of these cases along.
Okay, so and we're totally dependent or restricted by the decision from the state. There's nothing that we could do on our own via home rule to try to move any of those cases? We are limited?
The Supreme Court of the state has exclusive jurisdiction over the operation of the courts, including the municipal courts. So we would have to see some leadership high in the judiciary branch in order to permit the courts to proceed with electronic hearings and that sort of thing. Yes, ma'am.
All right. Thank you.
I'm looking at an email because I wanted to make sure that I had the date correct. I'm looking at an email that I received last week from Judge Ewing. And Judge Ewing was emailing me to make me aware that she was working with an IT company, and I think it's the same company that East Point has been using. East Point has been doing some of their cases by Zoom. Believe it or not, they have, but they only been doing 15 to 20 cases per day on their calendar. They're not doing a whole lot. She was going to look into this, Randy and counsel, and get back with me. But she also suggested that's going to cost the city an additional amount in our budget is the fact that with the pandemic hitting us, we're going and we go back into session with municipal court, we're going to have to add some other court dates.
Right.
And I'm thinking she's trying to add at least two court sessions on the fourth Thursday of each month. So that's going to be another expense because what we have budgeted for her is for X number of appearances in our municipal court. And if she adds two more, that's going to be an additional cost. So I'll let you know as soon as I hear from her how is it working or what she's found out with from IT. But I think she's looking at trying to figure out if this is really working over in East Point. I'm not sure about Zoom doing a court, but it may work. We'll just see. Like I said, this is unprecedented times, and we're each out here trying to figure out how we're going to maneuver through this. So with that being said, are there any other comments concerning the governor's emergency ordinance? Okay, Randy, I'll look to have a conversation with you or Valerie on tomorrow. Just tell Valerie to give me a call. I'll be available, okay?
I will, ma'am. Thank you.
Okay. The next item on the agenda is Parks and Recreation. Mr. Colbert, is for Mayor and Council to approve the mental fitness agreement for use of the Fairbairn Youth Center located at 149 Southwest Broad Street. Mr. Colbert, are you on the line?
Yes, Madam Mayor, I'm on the line. We are recommending to Mayor and Council members the approval of the agreement for use of the Fairbairn Youth Center at 149 Southwest Broad Street for their summer camp programming and after-school programming. And we're recommending approval to the mayor and to council.
Considering what's going on, Mr. Colbert,
yeah.
I see that this lease is dated May 20th. Well, it's this agreement made as of May 27th. We don't know what's going to happen. So is Mr. Childs ready to sign a new lease, not knowing, you know, how long we're going to be closed?
Mayor, this is Councilman Whitmore.
Yes.
I can answer that, Mayor. I did have a conversation with John Childs, and I believe he may be on the line. John Childs just happens to be one of those businesses that has received his payroll protection, which gives him a certain percentage that he will have to continue making his monthly payments for leasing. And he is willing to do that because, number one, he's making sure that he doesn't lose any of his employees, and also because he's going to have to report back to the government as well. So I believe Mr. Childs is online. John, are you on?
Yes, sir. Good evening, Mayor, Council. Hope everyone is doing well.
Good evening.
Yes, everything that the councilman said is accurate. We're fortunate enough to be able to have some funds to be able to use for lease payment moving forward, and then through another grant that we applied for, we had already earmarked a certain percentage of it for lease payments.
Okay.
And in addition, Mayor, John, will you share with Mayor and Council your plans as far as the summer camp is concerned, please?
I'm actually in no rush to have 120 children in any fashion, face to face anywhere, and. So what we've done is I've refunded the 70 or so parents that had pre-registered up until March. I've refunded them their registration fees for summer camp. And what we're going to do is to offer some free virtual STEM and STEAM activities and hopefully some financial literacy classes. Definitely some Lego engineering classes. So it's a total paradigm shift for us. We're moving from person to person to online just so that we can stay relevant and be able to provide some free programming, and hopefully our parents will appreciate that because I personally, as an owner, just don't feel confident enough to have an in-person summer camp, although I see some camps are moving forward, but I don't feel safe enough to do that, even if the buildings were open right now.
Okay.
And in addition to that, Mayor, as you see in the history, the mental fitness program has provided over $50,000 in scholarships to date to the participants of the STEAM program. And by him going into a virtual camp free of charge, also to ensure that we make sure that parents realize that we're engaged and we want them to come back when we're back in a regular camp status. So I take my hat off to John for thinking outside the box and coming up with a way to still engage the youth of the city.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you all for that information. Council, do you have any questions for Mr. Childs?
Yes, Mayor. Councilwoman Portis-Jones.
Oh, go ahead, Councilwoman.
Thank you very much. John, I too want to commend you for thinking outside of the box, and I am really glad to hear that the children will not be present. I think it's too early, and would put everybody at risk to do that. That being said, what are you thinking about that? And is that something we need to stipulate in our agreement? Because I feel that you know, be putting the city at risk as well if kids are present on the premises prematurely.
Yes.
Great point. So I'm in conversations now with our insurance provider about what types of new coverages will be available for something like this. What I'm told by our insurance attorneys is that someone could, you know, arbitrarily blame a business or, you know, anybody for them contracting the coronavirus. They can make that claim very easily. The burden of proof, though, would be really hard because then they'd have to isolate that your particular business is exactly where it came from. So those are my questions around the liability issue. But then just around the public health issue, I'm just not interested in trying to be the first over that hill, if you will, to, you know, just be first to try to open up in that regard. So I'll keep you updated as to what kind of new coverages at all if we have to attain. But otherwise, we will not be person to person for a while now. And I'll just add that on my board, I'm fortunate enough to have the HR director for Atlanta Public Schools and two principals, and there's no certainty of whether the school year will start off with children in the building. So we just, it's all playing by ear. Anybody that says that they know what's going to happen is simply not telling you the truth. And so we'll just play it by ear like everyone else.
Okay, so all I ask, Randy, is that we have language about being notified when the intent to have children present on the premises.
Right.
I think that's it's in our best interest to know, and that we are in agreement that that is a good time for that to happen, just to make sure. Is that possible?
Yes, ma'am. We can do that.
Okay. And then my second question is regarding the rent payments. Help me to understand. I note in the agreement that you're paying $750 per month from June and July, and that you then it is reduced to $682 August through May. Could you tell me why it's reduced?
Mm-hmm. Yes, ma'am, and it's been that way now, I guess, a couple of years. During the school months, we only use the youth center. And in the summertime, we use 310 Northwest Broad Street for the overflow of children.
Wow. Okay. So, Randy, can we make sure that that's noted in the agreement as to why that is happening? Because there's no explanation for that.
Yes, ma'am. We can do that.
All right. Mm-hmm.
I'll work with John
okay.
on that. Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you so much.
Okay, this is Councilwoman Davis. I have a question for Randy in reference to the actual contract. Do we need to put some verbiage in there that it is going to be, because just reading it, my concern when I first looked at this was Are children going to be there, considering the pandemic that we're in? So sort of alluding back to Councilwoman Portis Jones' statement, do we need to put some verbiage in there in reference to this being virtual and then make an amendment or something when it is okay and clear for person to person?
Well, I think that ties into what Councilwoman Porter Stone said about, you know, at least getting notice of when children might be there. It could be worthwhile for Mr. Culbreth to get together with Mr. Childs and reach some agreement about what their plans are, at least, and if their plans are unsettled, to have some language written into the contract to do exactly what you just said, and that is to...
Okay.
Yes, we can do that.
We'll be...
Okay.
We can work
Thank
with
you.
With John and John.
okay.
Get, yes, we can do that. Absolutely.
This is, Councilman Whitmore. Councilman Whitmore, Mayor.
Yes, sir.
Randy, here's the question I have for you. As John already indicated, we are following the school schedule. Whenever they open the schools back up, there will not be any children in any of our facilities throughout the summer program. It's all a virtual program, and I just wanted to make sure that that was clear. No students will be coming into any of the city buildings until the possibility of the new school year opening up, which would be in July. And then that would still be in communication with what we're doing as far as city buildings and everything else.
Yeah. I think we can get together with Mr. Childs and Mr. Culbreth and clarify that. Yes, sir.
Okay.
Okay. Are there any other questions considering the changes that or additions that we need to put into this contract? And the school, kids are out of school right now. There's not really a rush for us to, we can bring it back on our next meeting, which is not going to be, I think the next meeting is June the 11th. What would council like to do? Because we have to notify the city when the children will enter the premises, and then we need to talk about the virtual learning. We want to have this in the contract, and then we also want to specify the difference of the monthly rental from $750 to $682. So those are changes that, in addition, that needs to go into the contract. So I would suggest that we make those and have a good contract before we bring it back to council.
Right. Great.
Yes.
I agree. We will work to have that done, and that will be coming back to council on June 8th.
Okay, so it's June 8th. Okay. Okay. All right. All righty. Okay. So we'll bring this back on June 8th for further discussion and approval. The next item on the agenda is City Clerk. Erica, you're on the line for Mayor and Council
yes,
to approve
Mayor.
The amended 2020 meeting schedule.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Council. I'm bringing before a proposal to add the June 22nd and the July 13th meeting back onto the regular schedule. We vote on the yearly schedule in January of each year. This year, the GMA conference was canceled, as well as we have a council holiday on July 13th, and I was proposing reinstatement of both of those meetings.
Okay, Council, you've heard the desires of our city clerk. Is there a discussion?
This is Councilwoman Davis. I am definitely in agreement with the June 22nd
because of GMA conference being canceled, being reinstated. And if we could keep the holiday for July 13th, that would be great. But whatever the majority decides, I'll go along with it.
Is there any other comment concerning, anybody has any comments concerning the July 13th holiday, whether or not we want to put it back on the calendar or we want to leave it as is?
Well, Mayor, here's a question for you, Mayor. Going through the pandemic, not knowing where we're going to be financially, in your opinion, do you think it's something that we really need to have that July 13th meeting? Because after the 22nd meeting, if we don't have the 13th, we don't come back until the 27th of July. And is there, do you anticipate any pending things that we probably need to transact coming up through the summer?
In this day and time, I really can't say. I just don't know what may be coming down the pipeline right now. It's just the will of council. If they want to be off on the 13th, it's just up to will of council. I don't think in January, in July, there's going to be many folks traveling. I just don't see people really going out, taking vacations. But, you know, you still have folks that maybe in July still don't want to come out. So it's just up to council to make that decision. But I don't foresee anything on a city business side right now that will require us to be there on July 13th.
In that case, I will agree with Councilwoman Davis having the 22nd of June reinstated and leaving the July 13th as a holiday.
Okay, so it will be left as is. Any other discussion? We have the comments from Councilman Whitmore and Councilwoman Davis.
I'm in agreement. Mayor Pro Tem Smallwood, I'm in agreement with keeping the holiday as well. As I look at the schedule, I mean, we're pretty much from April to November rolling. So I don't see a problem with keeping that July holiday.
Okay. So is there a motion on the floor to approve the amended 2020 meeting schedule where we will reinstate the June 22nd meeting, and also we will keep July 13th as a council holiday? Is there a motion?
Councilman Whitmore,
Go ahead.
Councilman Whitmore,
Councilwoman Davis, second. Okay, motion made by Councilman Whitmore and seconded by Councilwoman Davis. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? That motion carries 6-0. The last item on the agenda for tonight is under property management. Mr. Harvey Stokes, for mayor and council to approve the 10-year lease agreement between the City of Fairburn and Tryon Studio MFI for building number 3, located at Fairburn's educational campus at 336 West Broad Street. Is Mr. Donaldson on the line, Mr. Stokes?
Yes, Mayor, I am here.
Okay. How are you doing, Chris?
I'm doing wonderful, Mayor Hirsch. Thank you.
Good. Okay, I'm going to turn the floor over to Mr. Stokes first and then Mr. Donaldson.
Thank you.
Good evening, Mayor and Council.
Good evening.
I'm here tonight to ask the Mayor and Council to consider that lease agreement for a 10-year lease agreement with Mr. Christopher Donaldson with Tryon Studios. The building we're referring to is the one at 336 West Broad Street. It's been vacant for the last 6 years. It was built back in 2013, and it was built as a shell. Mr. Donaldson have a great interest in this building and finishing it out, making an educational studio out of it, and I think it's going to be a great compliment to the city of Fairburn. The building itself is 25,307 square feet. The intent is to occupy the entire building, so it's not separated like some of the other businesses we've had come in the city that wanted the first floor, second floor, whatever. Makes it pretty difficult to manage a building like that, but by him taking possession of this entire building gives him an opportunity to do the build out, as well as the city to provide the $60,000 up front to go along with this build out. I noticed some question was asked about the $60,000, which is not unusual. We did this before with Georgia Military with Student Lounge. We did this with the Knight Driving School and also Bernal University, which was a shell when Bernal, before Bernal took possession of it. We put this kind of money up as an incentive to the leasee to try to help them along the way. I recommend that the city approve this lease and let's get someone in this building so we can occupy it and get some funding back for the city. Mr. Donaldson is here tonight. If you have any questions, feel free to ask either one of us. Thank you.
Mr. Donaldson, before council chimes in, you want to just go over your strategic plan for the building? We've had conversations, Councilwoman Davis and you and I, but I want council to hear from you what your vision and mm-hmm. and just what your objectives are for this third building down at the educational campus. Mr. Donaldson.
Sure. Mayor, thank you very much. And council members, thank you for giving me the platform at this time. I'm Christopher Donaldson. I'm the CEO, founder of Trion Studios. We're based out of Los Angeles, and we built studios in Washington, D.C. and Pennsylvania. We're in the Atlanta, Georgia area. I do films for HBO, Starz, Lifetime, and Encore Networks. However, we also have a film institute in which we teach young folks the curriculum of film school. You know, when I was in school, it was we had trade schools. Trade schools have evaporated out of the school system, so now our students have to wait till they're 18 years old to try to go to film school. I'm a graduate of AFI out of Los Angeles, California, and I studied up under George Lucas and John Singleton and some of the great ones. So we came to Atlanta. We implemented our film program actually in one of the high schools, Arlington Christian School in Fairburn. And we implemented that last year. We invested $250,000 into building studios there. And in turn, their tuition has increased tremendously. I looked at the building with Councilmember Linda Davis and the mayor and Mr. Harvey. What we would like to do is we would like to bring this film program as well as build studios to that building over there. Now, we're aligning it with the STEM program that's being built over there. But, however, these kids will have an even playing field to learn cinematography, writing theory, lighting, gaffing, producing, financing, and give them that urge that from the 9th to the 12th grade, once they graduate, they'll have accolades. They'll have the credentials. They can walk to a Tyler Perry studio or to a Metro studio and say, this is the reason why I deserve that $100,000 paying job. As well, in the building, we will build television studios. We partnered with the great actor Charles Dutton. The legendary Angie Stone is a partner. She'll be over there teaching vocals, vocal lessons, how to teach vocals, what is film scoring. So I think with this, we bring to Fairburn is a great incentive. It's a great push for young folks to have that. They can get that light in their eyes again that, hey, instead of watching 246 movies being built around them, they can become a part of it. They can learn what is going on in actually in Atlanta, Georgia. So that's our push. We're excited about it. We thank you for the opportunity to have the building. So we talk about even the school system. You know, we're not sure if school's going to open up in the fall. I'm sure some concerns might be on how we're going to fund the programs in the studio. Well, blessingly, Trion Studios, we're also the executive producers of 32 new films. So these 32 new films are already greenlit. So there's a $250 million budget for these films. Now, we take a certain portion of that budget is in our own studios inside that building in the bottom. So funding the building will not be a problem. In the first 24 months, we're going to invest $1.5 million into the build-out of this building. State-of-the-art studios, graphic design rooms for the kids, classroom studios, editing suites for these young people. I think it's just a win situation, and Arlington Christian School, for the last year, they've won with this program.
Thank you, Mr. Donaldson. Thank you so much. Very exciting. Very exciting with
thank
the
you.
STEM
yes.
school, which is right less than a couple of blocks from that building. You're right that that building has been a shell of a building for over 6 or 7 years. And we were just waiting for the right people to come along. So with that being said, Council, you have any questions for Mr. Donaldson, or do you have any questions or comments for Mr. Harvey Stokes? The floor is open at this time.
Councilman Talent, I have something I'd like to ask of Mr. Donaldson, if that's all right.
Yes, sir.
And I'm speaking as the probably the only old, and I do mean old, New York SAG-AFTRA guy in the room tonight.
All right.
So if you'd be kind enough to explain to the folks listening out there the business of gaffers and grips and all the rest of that, the coursework that's involved, and the kind of money these people will be able to make as a result of those sorts of things, I think that would prove useful for the folks who are listening in tonight.
I thank you. Thank you for that, Councilman. Gaffing, as you know, union. The thing about Georgia is they allow right-to-work states, so it's non-union and union. However, these kids learning how to be a gaffer or learning how to be a grip on set or a cinematographer on set, I mean, we've got guys in this industry have retired from being a gaffer or a grip. They make excellent money. They're on major sets. A lot of times you get to travel the world. So offering this curriculum to these young folks and unionizing them at a young age is just an incredible benefit for them.
Will your courses or classes, will they receive certifications very similar to what the folks at the Georgia Film Office and Academy are doing as we go forward?
That is correct. They will receive the credentials. We'll be teaching acting, so therefore they become SAG and AFTRA certified. Because not only are the students learning within the classroom, they will be getting hands-on experience on actual union sets.
Okay.
So it is a great win. At the age of 18, you can walk in with your credits, with your certification, graduating from high school.
Wow. Mr. Palin, do you have any other questions or comments?
No.
Mr. Palin?
No, I do not. Thank you.
Do we have any other questions or comments from any other council member?
Yes, Councilwoman Portis-Jones.
Okay, Councilwoman Portis-Jones.
Mr. Donaldson, thank you so much for being present with us, and thanks for sitting through the other agenda items. I want to thank you for for looking at Fairburn and for envisioning how the building could be used for the academy that you've described. Early on, I had numerous questions regarding the cost because it was presented to us that the $60,000 was for the build-out. But that didn't make sense to me because it's a shell of a building. But you have stated that you and your company are putting in, is it 1.5? Is that what I heard you say?
Yes, over the next 24 months, we'll be investing.
Over the next 24 months for the build out, do you anticipate or are you looking or seeking from any other financial support from the city once you're operational?
No, we won't be needing. Actually, we'll be actually employing a residents of Fairburn. It's one of the strong things that we would like to do is this, the people of Fairburn to offer jobs, positions within the studio.
Okay. And I saw that in your proposal, but it read that like it was only the citizens of Fairburn. That's not correct, is it?
Well, no. We would like to, you know, I'm a kid from Philadelphia, so I'd rather give the Fairburn residents opportunity first prior to someone coming from DeKalb County over to Fairburn and the money going out of the city.
Absolutely. I just wanted to be clear about, the language that was written in the proposal. So that is fantastic. So my other question, so what will be the capacity for students?
Well, we're aligning it with the STEM program. So it breaks down into classes, actually a cinematography class, a writing class, theory class. However, we want to give more hands-on. So we're looking at approximately from 9 to 13 students per class. So it's not large classes. It's not large classes at all.
And these classes, and they will be free to Fairburn residents, is that correct?
I would like to make that offer. To free to Fairburn residents, as well as give away good scholarships to some of the students outside of Fairburn. Our objective is really to give these students an even playing field and $10 billion being built around them. Because, coming into Atlanta, there's $10 billion in the film industry, but our students don't have an even playing field to be a part of that. And we want to make them a part of it.
And that's great. Thank you. And my last question is, how did you determine your square footage rental rate? What did you base those numbers on?
Ms. Porter Jones, that's a question that I think should go to Mr. Harvey Stokes because he actually compiled those rates. Mr. Stokes, you'll answer that question.
Yes, ma'am. Those rates were to get him started because what he's having to do with this building in order to fulfill what he wants to do, he would do it in phases. When he first opened this building, hopefully come August the 1st, the only level that he will open would be the main level. And he will work his way to the upper level, the main level being the administration part. The upper level would be the classroom part and the lower level being the studio part. Each one of those is divided into phases. So rather than to charge him the rate that I was charging Georgia Military because the rest of the building is unoccupied, that's the reason I went with the low scale and worked our way up. After the fifth year, he's paying exactly what Georgia Military is paying.
Okay. That's very helpful information. Thank you so much for that. Thank you.
No
other questions.
Thank you.
Council, does anyone else have any questions or comments for Mr. Stokes or Mr. Donaldson?
Councilman Pound, I have a question to ask Randy, if I might. And Randy, you shared some information today about the circumstances surrounding moving forward with this opportunity that we have. Can you share briefly with the folks who are listening here tonight what those issues are and how they get resolved and how we move forward with this?
Yes, thank you, Ms. Palin. The lease that is in front of you is a lease that would begin August 1st of 2020. The reason for that delay is that Mr. Donaldson and Ms. Donaldson and I have discussed this, I think, two different occasions, that he is has applied for and is a and will be, he's expecting to get nonprofit status for Tryon Studios between now and that August 1st date that on which this lease would commence. He may also seek to create a different company that has nonprofit status to be the company that actually operates the school. And Mr. Donaldson, you please step in if I say anything that is not correct, if I misstate anything. So
no, that's correct, man.
This, as stated in the emails this afternoon, this entire education campus was constructed on the issue of tax-exempt bonds by the Downtown Development Authority. And pursuant to the tax code and the rules of the Internal Revenue Service, that entire facility cannot be leased to for-profit business entities. And Mr. Donaldson and I have discussed that in detail. And the purpose of getting this started now was to permit the city to have the city have assurances that it can begin to do the work that Mr. Stokes has talked about, which is really, I think, as Mr. Stokes has indicated, is somewhat of a drop in the bucket for making that building. Getting that building up to a state where it can be occupied. And it will also permit Mr. Donaldson and his folks to begin some preparations for that date at the same time that they are finalizing their nonprofit status. And as I have spoken with Mr. Donaldson, he certainly understands that, you know, continuing a lease with this firm is conditioned on the lessee being a nonprofit entity, and that any efforts that his firm undertakes to improve that building, if for whatever reason that nonprofit status is held up and not in effect at that August 1st date, then we will have to stop it and reconsider how we move forward from that time. Mr. Donaldson, I think that's accurately states our discussions, and that is the purpose for the second paragraph of this lease, which you will see, which says that this is, in effect, a promise to commence this lease for 10 years beginning on August 1st. And now I have a fire truck driving by my window. Sounds like I live in the city. But I hope that answers your question, Mr. Palin.
It does, Randy. I just want people to understand the process here. That's all. Yeah.
Thank you. I think it's an important thing to understand.
Yeah.
And I've had these discussions with Mr. Stokes and Mr. Donaldson, and I think we are all on in agreement, and Mr. Donaldson understands that as a component of moving this forward.
Councilwoman Portis-Jones, question, follow-up question?
Yes, ma'am.
Councilwoman Portis-Jones.
Oh, yes. I think it's appropriate to have that language in this agreement. What you just described, there's no evidence that that's what's happening, and there is no evidence of that discussion that you've had. So could we modify this agreement to include that language? or something that spells out that condition?
Well, that condition is expressed in the second paragraph of the lease agreement.
Yeah.
Understanding of the parties regarding nonprofit status.
Yeah. That's correct.
Okay. I'm sorry. Which paragraph is that now?
It's the second paragraph of the lease agreement. It's just above Article 1.
Yeah. Understanding the parties. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Okay. All right, then. Yes. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Are there any other comments or questions for Mr. Stokes, Attorney Turner, or Mr. Donaldson?
Mayor?
Motion on the
Councilwoman
Davis.
Councilwoman Davis, I have a comment, if I may.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. I just want to say to my colleagues and to the mayor and other citizens is that I have personally interacted with Mr. Donaldson and his director of operations, Mr. Tate, for the last 5 months. And I have witnessed their humility and their dedication to teaching and preparing the students at Arlington Christian School. So I've been over there on a number of occasions, and I've witnessed this. And the various skills that they are teaching those students and how to interview, how to do radio broadcasting, will give those students an opportunity to have a decent living wage. And that is what's going to be such a plus for the city of Fairburn and surrounding, and the tremendous economic impact this is going to have on the city of Fairburn and the benefits to our youth is going to be tremendous. So I just wanted to share that comment.
Okay. are there any other comments or questions before I call for the vote, please?
Councilman Heath.
Councilman Heath.
Yes, I would just like to welcome Mr. Donaldson to our city. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Councilman.
Getting ready to take the vote now. Councilman Whitmore?
Yes, ma'am. And again, it's been 6 years coming, so it's great to know that we're going to have somebody finally occupying that third building.
Yes.
Councilman
Thank you, sir.
Smallwood, before I take the vote.
I echo the same sentiments of everyone. Let's get this vote done.
Okay. Is there a motion? Okay, we're ready. Is there a motion on the floor to approve the lease?
So moved. Mayor Pro Tem, so moved.
But I have to get it on the record. Let me get it on the record, please. Okay. Is there a motion on the floor to approve the lease agreement between the City of Fairburn and Trion Studios, MFI?
Mayor Pro Tem Smallwood says so moved.
Motion made by Mayor Pro Tem Smallwood and Heath. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, that motion carries 6-0. Mr. Donaldson,
yes,
welcome
ma'am.
To the city of Fairburn.
Thank you very much, council members. Thank you very much, Mayor Randy, Harvey. You guys are great. Thank you very much. We look forward to it.
Welcome. Thank you. And I'll get my secretary to call you on tomorrow, and we'll set up a conference call, okay?
Okay. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay, that's the last agenda item on the agenda for tonight. I'll begin with comment from Councilwoman Portis-Jones.
Yes, thank you so much, Mayor. First of all, I want to give a shout out and say kudos to Ms. Angela Jackson and the Finance Department for the work they did in completing our audit and getting it in on time. I know, Ms. Jackson, you came in the midst of some things, and you had several interruptions or disruptions during the process, but appreciate all the work you and your team put together for the audit. I do want to echo, though, what Mr. Moses said regarding how we need to operate in these uncertain times. We've been successful in building our reserves, but it could easily and very quickly evaporate if we are not careful. And based on the finances that Ms. Jackson provided to us last week, our last meeting, it is evident that we're going to see some reductions. And so I just want to echo that. And then the last thing I want to say is I, too, welcome Mr. Donaldson, his vision and the work that he's doing, going to do for our Fairburn residents in the school. The issue was never about what he was doing. The issue was the lack of information that we had in making this decision. So thank you, Mayor, Randy, Harvey, Ms. Jackson, in responding to the numerous questions that we had to really understand the impact that leasing that building would have. And, you know, it has to work in conjunction with GMC and Brunel. So I really appreciate that, and thank you. And with that, no more comments.
Councilman Palin.
Well, I'm pleased to know that Brian is headed to that property that we have at the campus. That's good for us. And other than that, a wop bop, a loo bop, a wop bam boom. Little Richie. No further comments.
Councilman Whitmore. Councilman Whitmore.
Yes, Mayor. Just a couple of things. Mayor, I know that in the past you met with the upper management of Food Depot, but just like to share with Mayor and Council, I did receive a phone call from one of our citizens today that went shopping in the Food Depot, and they purchased the item, and when they got home, it was already expired. And I know that they're supposed to be operating under FIFO, first in, first out, but obviously they have failed to do this in the past, and they're right back to the same way of doing business. So I just didn't know, Mayor, if there's a possibility that we reach out to corporate to communicate with them in reference to what our citizens are complaining about and what we have seen in the past, so that we can see some improvement so that our citizens, when they do shop there, they don't go home and be disillusioned or upset because they have purchased something that was expired.
Okay. I'll make a comment on that at the very end, Ms. Whitmore.
Okay. And other than that, I'm just happy about the third building that's going to be occupied by Trion. And, again, great job, finance. And no further comments, Mayor.
Okay, thank you. Councilman Heath?
Yes, ma'am. I just want to say that I appreciate all the work that you and Ms. Davis and a few others did on this, Mr. Stokes and everything. That building has been like a sore spot for me. Even though when we built it, we were of the understanding that GMC was going to expand. But at any rate, really delighted that we have got the building taken care of. I'm delighted with the amount of money that Mr. Donaldson says they're going to put into that building. I mean, I know $60,000 sounds like a lot of money to us, but when you're trying to build out a building like that, that's not much money at all, I'll be honest with you. I want to thank all of my colleagues for working together to get this pushed through and everything. Mm-hmm. It is just a terrific time that we mm-hmm. all should celebrate what has happened. And I mm-hmm. and then too, I would like to thank those people in our city that have been so supportive of everything that we have done, and just very thankful. I know we can't say enough about our employees and our managers and all of us, because without them, we wouldn't be able to do what we're doing now. Just want to thank everybody, and I hope you have a safe and restful night, and talk to y'all later. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Heath. Councilwoman Linda Davis.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm going to be very quick and brief. I also want to give a lot of praise to Angela Jackson, who's Director of Finance Department, and those that work with her in getting this audit done under really tough deadlines and everything. We appreciate you. We appreciate the staff during this pandemic time and the things that you have to had to go through that you don't normally have to go through. I also want to thank the mayor for her support and vision in reference to Mr. Donaldson. The mayor, very supportive, very receptive, and everything, and Harvey and your hard work. And I just welcome Mr. Donaldson to Fairburn, and Fairburn is already fantastic. It is just going to be fabulous now. That's it.
Okay. And last but not least is Mayor Pro Tem Ulysses Smallwood.
All right. No comments last time, but I just want to say that this was a very productive meeting. Hello out there to everyone in virtual world that I can't see. Usually able to see you all in our live sessions, but thank you all for joining in. Wonderful audit. Great new partner that's going to fill that building. That is awesome. And I just want to say that, this is evidence of what we do as a council. We may not agree all the time on everything, and nobody does in life. But I just want to just say that this is evidence of the great job that we do. And Fairburn is truly situated to succeed. And, I'm just excited going forward. Thank you all.
Thank you, Mayor Pro Tem. Just two small comments tonight. The first one is piggybacking on Councilman Whitmore and Food Depot. You are correct. I've had a couple of meetings with the higher management at Food Depot. I've met with them in the store, and I've met with them in City Hall. Each time I've met with them, they have corrected the issues, and the food expiration dates, they were watching them, and then they slacked up again. And so we're back to where we started a year or so ago with Food Depot. So we're going to have to take drastic measures with them right now, because that is unacceptable. They should not have any unexpired food in that store. And it seems to be a norm with them now. And I'm going to have the last conversation, and then we're going to take the other measures that is within our purview to take to make sure that they don't continue to sell expired food there in that store. It has just become an issue. And also, when the pandemic first hit, they had also started increasing their prices on certain foods in the store. Eggs were costing, just regular white eggs was costing $4 a dozen. And so whenever I would get the calls, I would personally go to Food Depot and take pictures. And but they always know when I'm coming in the store. And so I always have an escort as I go around the store, because they want to see what I'm taking pictures of. And I have pictures in the office of expired food. So we're going to take the next step to correct this issue, and I'll report back to council on this because this is very serious. I am awaiting the deed from Fulton County. As soon as that deed comes in, we will be the new owners of the old courthouse. And that's also great news for Fairburn. That has been in our, that courthouse has been sitting over there for years and years, and it's become dilapidated. And it's time that we have ownership of it so that we can get some grants and repair that building. And it had recently in the last year become a safety hazard. And so everybody's out of the building now. The building has been secured, and we're waiting on the deed from Fulton County. So with that being said, work is still going on in the city of Fairburn. There's very little that will keep me from doing the work I was elected to do, and I will continue to do it. And so with that being said, do I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved, Councilman Whitmore.
Motion made by Mayor Pro Tem Smallwood and seconded by Councilman Whitmore. All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? That motion carries. The meeting is now adjourned. Be safe out there. Take care.
Thank you.